this meeting to order. Today is Monday, September 28th, 2020, and this is the working session of the Elizabeth School District Board of Directors. It is 6:04 p.m. Can I get roll call, please?
Director Bankendorf.
Yes, here.
Director Fumbeller.
Here.
Director Gutenberg.
Here.
Director Hines.
Present.
Director Karcher.
Here.
Would you please stand and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance? I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Can I get a motion to approve the agenda?
So moved. Second.
Any discussion?
No.
Roll call, please.
Director Bankendorf.
Yes.
Director Fumbeller.
Yes.
Director Gutenberg.
Aye.
Director Hines.
Aye.
Director Karcher.
Aye.
Can I get a motion to approve the minutes from the board meeting of September 14th, 2020?
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? Roll call, please.
Director Bankendorf.
Yes.
Director Fumbeller.
Yes.
Director Gutenberg.
Aye.
Director Hines.
Aye.
Director Karcher.
Aye.
We have no education showcase, so we will move into communications from our superintendent. Look at you, you to go early.
He's caught off guard. He's so unprepared. He still had a few text messages to send.
I am pushing it by reporting to you again that things are going really well. When I say pushing it, it's just, I feel like I've been a broken record.
Keep being that broken record.
Yeah,
but don't change it.
I just, as I've said, I want to schedule some time for each of you, and we just can sit down, to come and visit the schools for an hour, hour and a half, and see what's going on, because I am inspired and like motivated and just delighted to see, to some degree, normal school activity, but it's also not, it's more than normal. I mean, the kids laughing, the kids engaged in their lessons, the way that people are working together, little things that the schools have done to in routines or safety measures, you know, different doors that they enter or how lunch happens. And so I really think that that those of you that are able and interested to come in and see it firsthand, because I just don't think I can do it justice, although I'm trying. Just little conversations with a teacher who has a student in their class that's remote, and they've got the setup, and it's their first day trying it, and they're like walking around helping the kids there and trying to, you know, also teach the student who's remote and learning the technology, and the attitude that they have, that the kids have, how it's working. And at the middle school, they've created a counseling space that they painted and has lights, and it's kind of this cool, you know, it has some color and some interest, but it's also kind of calming, and that's where the counselors go sometimes when they need to kind of talk a student down or help them resolve something upsetting. And just there's like a million little things that are hard to get a sense of just by description. Our parents have been so cooperative and good at communicating in terms of how, you know, when their kids have a fever or a cough or a condition. Generally, they're not sending their kids to school when they're not well. There are exceptions to that, but that's not been the overwhelming situation. The students wearing masks, to see many elementary kids on their own wearing masks, not because they're required, right with kids that aren't wearing masks. It's just as natural as could be in this different environment. When you read what's going on in other school districts where they haven't even come back at all, or where they're in a hybrid, and you see the challenges that they're having. It's just, I don't know how to attribute it, but the combination of the students, the parents, and the staff, like I said at the last meeting, being on the same page, working together, that we're starting our sixth week of school with full classrooms, full schools, a normal routine, and dealing with, you know, the COVID and parents calling up and saying, I tested positive, I'm keeping my son or daughter home. Boom, great, here's your remote setup. It's just flowing really nicely. So I think that's the biggest and the same report that I've had, just the newest variation of it. And every day that's been a good day, I think is a win. Every week that's been a good week, and we're, as I said, we're now in our sixth week, and it just is beginning to feel a lot less like we're vulnerable to some unknown, some kind of catastrophe that would lead us to not have school operating the way that it is. It feels like we're capable of dealing with the kinds of things that we've come to expect, which is that people come down with a positive test, people get sick, they don't know, people don't want to get tested, all of those things. We're able to kind of roll with the punches. And the schools don't feel like a fearful place. I mean, you don't walk in and sense, oh my gosh, everybody's on eggshells, thin ice, worried about dying or catching something.
From a parental point of view of two kids that are there, the biggest fear in the high school right now is that something happens where they have to go remote and they can't be in school. They all want to be in school. And so I've even heard from other parents, there's a sense of accountability among the kids that if somebody's walking around with their mask down or they are in the bathroom and decide to walk out without washing hands, they're calling each other out on it. And they're like, don't do that. I want to stay in school. So it's been very, very positive.
How often do you hear high schoolers who want to stay in school? That's
never.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And I
it's
think,
a completely
I think you're
different
spot on. Is day and the age. Kids want to be there, so they are all doing their part.
Right.
I think the parents want their kids to be in school, so they're doing their part.
Yeah, we got a flavor of them being home with us for 3 months. We don't want that again.
Right, and the teachers really like their work. The teachers, they like to be with kids. They like to teach their subject. They want to do it face-to-face. And so there's a spirit of cooperation, not a spirit of like rule enforcement and danger and off limits or, you know, out of bounds. It's a very much more fluid than you might imagine. It's not like there's protocols where you go, well, this is a little unusual from the bus into the schools at the middle school, they each go into a different place. It happens naturally.
The buses are working okay?
Yep.
I think that's great. We're in a good spot.
We're in a really good spot. I feel so fortunate. I mean, there are other districts that I think may be similar. I mean, I've heard that it's more typical for rural schools to be back completely in person. Grand Junction is the largest school that's completely back in person. There are 18,000. I don't know exactly how that looks, but they're in a protect your neighbor status in terms of the number of cases in the community. We're in a good place because we're just up one category from that, and we've generally been there consistently, which is I think that it's 75 and under per 100,000.
It is.
And we've just popped into the next category like one day. So public health has said that's not going to be something that's driving decisions as a one day movement. But if there's a trend and a persistence of a different rate, then we would have to look at what we might need to adjust. But there's this, I would say, dynamic between what's going on in the community and what's going on in schools. And so far, our district and plenty of others, even ones where there's more community spread or outbreak, that the schools have been not transmitting the disease. I mean, there have been a case here or two cases there, but by and large, very low incidence of schools spreading. We do have to react when somebody comes in. And right now there's a joint superintendent effort to try to quantify that. So of the students and staff that have been quarantined because of an exposure, so somebody comes into the school and exposes students or staff, schools then exclude students and staff from either work or school. Many of them say they quarantine them. We're avoiding that language because we're not the ones quarantining. It's public health or a medical official, but we are excluding them from school in person. That to see of all of those that have gone remote or been quarantined, how many get sick or test positive? And it's a very, very small number. And the purpose then to gather that evidence is to then work with public health, whether that's UPHE or others, to provide some improvements to the guidance that might include, instead of just 14 days across the board, 7 days with a negative test and no symptoms. It might be, rather than a class or a cohort, the stricter definition of 6 feet or less for more than 15 minutes. Because many times when it's even that restrictive, there's no positive cases. Like in our case, there were 8 or 9, I think it's 8, students who were less than 6 feet for more than 15 minutes. And, you know, they might have been 4 feet, you know, or 3, I don't know, 3 feet for close to an hour and a half. And they didn't get the virus.
None of them did.
No. And that's been a pattern, generally. And we're trying to provide numbers, actual numbers, to be able to say, look at the amount of disruption. You know, X thousands of students out for 14 days for a very small number of those who actually get infected. You would say quarantine is working when you have a sufficient number of people that have been quarantined that get the virus, who because you've quarantined them, they don't spread it.
Right.
But if you're quarantining a whole bunch of people and nobody's getting it, then you say, babe, there's a lot of disruption for very little benefit.
Look at a certain college who's quarantined 2 dorms full of people.
Yeah. They're not listening to that either.
So anyway, I think that part of it is luck, which has been we've been fortunate. I mean, you can't but a lot has just been this kind of mutual cooperation and interest in keeping our schools.
Well, and you guys have done an excellent job.
Yeah.
You have.
And making it work.
Yep. Well, thank you. We've tried to limit the volume of things and just focus on the things that matter the most so that it's easier to implement and maintain. So we'll just, every week, every day that works, it's just, you know, another great day. And
it's interesting with all the, you know, I don't pay as close attention to the new cases in Colorado. But what you don't hear is hospitalizations. What you don't hear is deaths.
They're way down.
They're non-existent. Yeah. And, you know, this was 7 weeks ago, but St. Joe's, they had 9 people, I think they said, was in their
statewide,
hospital.
They're both way down.
Yeah.
I just read recently, past couple days, concern about mental health for teenagers and suicides. And I think the numbers are fairly close in terms of March to August, 10 to 19-year-olds. There have been 3 deaths as a result of COVID in that time period. There's been 31 suicides. So it's a 10 times bigger issue.
Colorado.
That just makes you sick.
10 times bigger issue. So, you know, just to put it into perspective. And so I understand people's concern about health and well-being by being in schools, but I think that it's certainly a lot smaller risk than teens, so it's 10 to 19 year olds, committing suicide order of magnitude of 10. So while it's certainly possible, it's more like statistically insignificant, but it's possible. And I think that we've discovered that in part, that it's not as, there isn't as much reason for fear and concern as we anticipated once we start to do it. And so I know I've been, and other people that have school system that are in session, encouraging those that haven't yet come back, that once you get over the hump and you get kids and teachers back into school, it's not as scary as it seems when you're, you know, it's like the water's not as cold as it looks. You know,
right.
Jump
right.
in.
Right.
It, you know, it's going to go better than.
I hear the virus expires midnight November 3rd. Anyway,
yeah, me so. Too. I heard that too.
And that's something.
What a coinky ding.
But, and just in the United States?
Yeah, yes.
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 Just in the United
yes.
States. Can you spread it to Spain where all my family lives?
Sure. Sure. We'll make that happen. So,
let's see. I don't know in other areas. I've given you some emails about athletics. So we have our football program is participating in the fall season. So is cheer, but it's not competitive. It's on the sidelines. And so we're trying to understand the restrictions for spectators. We'll probably, as I understand it, have to limit this number of spectators to 150. That'll most likely be done by some kind of ticketing system, not like who's the first to show up, because turning people away at the event as a kind of first come, first serve wouldn't work. That's how I understand other states that started football already are doing it, and we'll have to devise a system for who gets tickets. I believe we have 3 home games and 3 away games. There's some teams that are traveling. We have to travel out to, I think, Delta. And Moffitt is traveling to us.
Grand County.
Yeah.
Like,
but also.
Yeah, they're coming here, but we're going
to
Grandy.
Yeah. So.
Yeah, that was it. The schedule was in your email, right?
Yes.
And that schedule was put together for everybody
by
CHASA. Because what they did was they had indications from all the teams that wanted to play in the fall, and they said, okay, these are the teams, now let's give everybody a schedule. So it'll be a little bit more
travel. Ours is Lamar Woodland Park, but they come here?
Or yeah, it's the Bolt ones come here.
The Bolt ones come here. So Lamar, Moffitt County, and Inglewood come here. And then we go to Woodland Park, Middle Park, and Delta.
Yes. To Middle Park and the Delta. So, anyway, it's... what it is? We're planning for parent-teacher conferences. I don't know off the top of my head the dates, but they're coming up here in 2 or 3 weeks. 3 weeks?
And it usually around the middle of October?
Yes, I should know.
That's right.
It's 3 weeks.
Fall 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And what we're currently planning is a combination of in-person and or remote, starting with the elementaries, where they typically do a sign-up. They maybe have to say 20, 22 students. They'll have 20, 22 slots, and you can either sign up for in-person or Zoom or whatever. We won't do them at the same time as school at the elementary level, so it would be like Wednesday after school and Thursday during the day and the evening. The same, the high school and the middle school never have done them concurrent with school, and so that won't be a change for them. The elementary schools did in the past. They would do it during a planning period or lunch or right before school, because we just don't want to have the in and out of parents at the same time as we have students. But we're already, so to speak, exposed to the family and to the household because every teacher is working with the students. So it doesn't increase any risk by working with the families. And the high school and middle school are likely to do it in their classrooms so that you don't have that arena style, lots of people in the same place, right, and try to figure out how to space out the parents arriving so that there's not a lot of waiting around and standing in the hallways. And I don't know how they'll work that out.
Wait in their cars.
Pardon me?
Wait in their cars? Like they
send them a text. Send them a text when it's their turn.
Yeah. That's what they do at the barber shop. Right, Paul? You're a barber?
Yes. Yes.
He gets that trend.
Yeah.
This is like 4 months. What are you talking about? It's the 15th, 16th. Fall break.
I don't know if you have questions, but...
So, for the kids that you're saying that they're not quarantined, you used a different word for it?
Expelled.
Well,
excluded.
Excluded, thank you. Yeah.
Well, and that's a term that some people don't like because it sounds kind of harsh, but what we're saying is you're not well, and so you can't come to in-person learning in the schools. You have to learn at home through remote. It's longer. That's why it's easier and why a lot of schools just say, oh, we quarantined number of kids. We shifted eight kids to remote.
Sent home, I like that.
Yeah. Sent home, sure.
And then, there are also kids, though, that are remote learning because a family member tested positive, and so they just stay home. We don't tell them that they have to, I mean, they do, but it's not... It's a different situation than students who are in a classroom, and we just had this happen once, and somebody came in, and then that night they got symptoms, and everybody else in their household had the virus, and then they just, so we had to tell those students they were exposed, and you need to stay home through your quarantine period, and that public health recommends that you We're not telling people what to do with their entire life, just their school life. Yeah. But I go ahead.
So that's why you say excluded instead of quarantined, right, because we're not telling them they have to stay home for everything. They just are excluded from being in school.
We're not telling them what they need
that's
to do in
the
evening
is.
Or the weekends.
Yeah.
That's public health,
that's
or that's
job.
Their physician. Yeah. What we're saying is, you know, you have a family member who's tested positive. You're exposed. And therefore, you have to stay at home for school. I don't know if I'm answering your question.
But so what is the quarantine time frame for us to have these kids stay at school or stay at home from school?
The time period is typically 14 days from exposure. So what we'll do is the one situation a student came to school healthy on the day after Labor Day. It's a Tuesday. And they went through their classes. That night they got symptoms. And so then that's when, that day was when the clock started for 14 days, because that's when they were exposed.
Right.
And they didn't get it, but anyway, and I can't remember
so
exactly.
So nobody got it?
No.
From that, that's
and
awesome.
So, but, so this child is at home for 14 days and obviously symptom free.
Yes.
So we just want to make sure that they're symptom-free before they return.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
But to the later of the 14 days. So they need to be home for 14 days even though they are symptom-free at 10 days, correct? Is that what we're asking?
Well, yes. All of the students that were exposed in the school, and it was eight students that were exposed in the school because a student came in that had the virus. But at the time, they didn't know they had it. They didn't get symptoms till that night. You have to go back 48 hours to determine who they were in close contact with. We knew because we had seating charts where they sat in the classroom. It was less than 6 feet. It was more than 15 minutes. But we didn't quarantine or exclude the whole class, which some places have done, the teacher, everybody. And in hindsight, it was prudent because even the ones that were close didn't get it. So those students, they're healthy. Now, if they develop symptoms, then we have a different situation because then we have to look and see whether they might have gotten it at school. And then we have to look at what we're doing in school. And if we conclude that they did, then it's like, okay, what do we do going forward to reduce that risk of transmission in school? But their life is disrupted.
Sure.
So we want to minimize the number of people that we shift to remote learning because they've been exposed. If they've been exposed at home, we can't do much about that.
So then, still though, so if a child is sent home because he has some symptoms or something, so he is technically at home for 14 days, as long as he's symptom-free, he can come back. And that, we're once again not...
Yeah.
Requesting them to have a COVID test or anything of the sort, correct?
You're correct. That if they've been exposed and been excluded from in-person learning for that 14-day period from the time of exposure, if they don't develop symptoms, they can come back.
And what if they did have symptoms at the very beginning, and now they're home for the 14 days, and now they're feeling great, still no requirement for that test, correct? I mean, they're symptom free, they've been home for 14 days, they had 2 days maybe of symptoms, so maybe go from the 2 days out from 14 days, so they're home for 16.
I don't know if we've had that particular situation, so I think my answer would be more hypothetical and based on the charts from CDPHE. But if they were sick for a couple of days and then they were symptom free for 8, 10, whatever
right.
days, I believe we would have that. There would be no reason to exclude them at that point.
Okay.
We can't force or are not forcing anybody to get a test. And tests immediately after exposure aren't as reliable. So one of the things that some people have asked is, okay, I was exposed on that day after Labor Day, Tuesday. I learned that I was exposed, say, on Wednesday. I go get a test on Thursday, Friday, I have the results, can I come back to school? It's been very clear from public health, no, you can't. You have. And right now the rule is, if you've been exposed, you have to quarantine for 14 days from the time of exposure, regardless of a positive test. But that's where, as school leaders, we're gathering the evidence to make the case that length of time could be shortened. Because if you have, let's say, 2,000 students that were quarantined for 14 days and 4 of them got the virus, is that sufficient to say that the other 1,996 needed to be out of in-person instruction for a full 14 days. Boeing, for example, they already has shared that they don't, if somebody's exposed, they can't come back sooner than 5 days. That's a Boeing rule, and with a negative test. But if they come back on day 2 or 3 or with a negative test, that doesn't allow them. In part, just the virus doesn't grow or spread fast enough in the body to necessarily produce a positive test right away. And that's why it's 14 days, because you can develop symptoms in day 12, 13, 14. Or, you know, where there's enough of the virus where you have symptoms and you can test positive. So
I think the key is if they have symptoms. The one that exposed everybody, you go back, you said you go back 48 hours, that's probably when you got exposed. So on that Labor Day weekend, 48 hours would have been Saturday, maybe,
yeah.
Right? So they could have been safely, mm-hmm. You know, could have been exposed anywhere. But, then they exposed the other eight kids in their pod or whatever, in the class. If none of those had symptoms for 10 days, you know, what we would do in our office, because we had an employee that actually tested positive and had symptoms. So we basically shut down that location for, you know, well, we started with 14 days, and after 10 days, everybody was tested, not positive, none of them were positive, none of them had the symptoms, so we just said, come on back.
Yeah.
So it was a 10-day thing, you know. And it just made sense, and it worked fine, you know.
So we're hopeful that there can be, with some experience and evidence, a different protocol that could be developed that isn't so disruptive and impactful on students. And maybe it's the 10 days rather than 14.
But I think all the protocols you guys have put in place, you know, at the high school, the middle school, and the elementary schools, but the high school in particular, with the outdoor, you know, all those things really are making a difference in you know, kind of keeping that separation. I think it's working.
I did want to ask, how is the high school planning to deal with the outside classes, the windows open, the walks every half an hour, once the winter comes around?
Oh, our winters are so mild. Put a coat on, you're fine.
There you go.
Says
me that's freezing right now.
With a coat on.
Inside.
Suck it up, buttercup. Yeah, that's what I'm doing.
No, I'm just
so
curious.
Winter comes after November.
As I understand it, it's really going to be up to a combination of the teacher and the students, because there are some teachers, for various reasons, that typically aren't taking their students outside. There's one that has a health condition. And so it's not like there's an across-the-board rule, but it's highly encouraged in an hour-and-a-half class to take a break. So right now, a lot are going outside, but they don't need to go outside. They can get just outside of the classroom.
I see.
So
okay.
There's, you know, the pods, mm-hmm. at the end, walk the pods, or stand in the, they call it the bridge, I think, or whatever.
Yeah.
It's really getting out of the classroom, because if you kind of imagine this at a very kind of concrete level, that the odds in our community are that we're going to have one person enter one of our schools every month that has the virus.
Yes.
Now, it might be slightly more than that, because I did the calculation before we started school, and it seems like we've had some more cases in the community. A higher percentage. But if we just use that as a way to think about it. So we went through this exercise that I think I shared with you, where we put a Dr. Seuss hat on one person, and we had 15 people, and we just walked from the bus into the school, waiting until the bell rang, went to class, sat in the class, and go to the bathroom. We didn't all go to the bathroom, but like, where are the moments where there's greater risk, and then what can we do to mitigate that risk? And when you're sitting in the classroom for an hour to an hour and a half, or maybe even in the elementary school, you might be in that same classroom for 2 hours, and there is one student, not in the, you know, it's not everywhere in the school, but in that classroom, and they're breathing, and maybe they're quiet, or maybe they're talking, but the concentration of the virus could be slowly building up in that room, because what health officials know is that if you have a confined space with poor ventilation and lots of people and no masks, that the virus can build up. And so masks help reduce both the amount of virus in the air,
airborne,
right? But also so does ventilation. And the example, visual example, that has really been effective for me and a lot of other people is, and I'm gonna, you know, it's a kind of classic you know, you got a bunch of guys playing poker in the basement and smoking cigars, right? And they start out and everything's fine. But they get into it a couple hours and now that room is filled with smoke. And it's like, okay. And what would be a natural thing to do? It's like, okay, let's take a break. Let's go out on the deck or whatever. And in our schools, the air circulation system will begin to reduce the concentration of virus that might be in that room. So just leaving the room helps. The other thing is all the people that were in that room are now breathing a different air. Mm-hmm. And so even a quick walk around the school.
Perfect.
Right? And as you were saying, Kim, I think that people get accustomed to the colder weather and coats, and so there's plenty of time through the winter where it's okay to be outside for a little while.
Yeah.
And we'll just see the limits of that. But Paul, I think that, just getting out of the classroom.
That's great.
And then you go back in, and if there was somebody with the virus there, the concentration of the virus in that room would have been diminished. Would it have been to zero in the 10 minutes that they were out or whatever?
No.
But it keeps it from increasing. So it drops, and now that person who has the virus is back in there, but they then were not breathing the concentrated air, mm-hmm. or the higher concentrated, because it wouldn't be fresh air, because it would be still inside air, and hopefully along with whatever distance there is, and masks, and the other things. I think those are the big
great.
Ones.
Good.
We'll kind of have to see. I mean, as long as it's not spreading in our school and other schools, and we can have some confidence in the different measures that the schools are taking, then when we hit the winter, we can see whether it makes a difference, if we're not going outside or getting out of the classroom as much, if it begins to, the numbers of that are where there's a spread in the school, if that changes, we can say, oh, okay, that made more of a difference than we realized.
We had anyone come out to the flu shots to the staff?
Yes.
Teachers? Okay.
Yes. We've done that every year for probably more than a decade, and maybe much longer than that. The way that we do it now is we'll have Safeway come over. They'll be up at Singing Hills for part of the day, and then they'll be here. And then it gets charged to the insurance, and the insurance pays for it. There are a few people who aren't on the school district insurance who have Kaiser. Kaiser, you have to go to a Kaiser facility to get it. But so we'll pay for those. We don't anticipate them to be very many, but we'd rather err on the side of them if it's more convenient for them to get the shot here with us to do it and to pay for it.
I think that'll help mitigate confusion going into the winter, next year too, between the COVID and the flu.
Well, and I don't know if it's been sent out, but Lori Clark is sending out a message. It's planned to be sent out today to all parents, thanking them for their cooperation, for their partnership, because they've been keeping kids home a little sick. But then also reminding them that if anybody in the household is sick, then all students, whether they're sick or not, should stay home if somebody in the household. Or if somebody in the household is awaiting a test, then they should also stay home until the results of the test is known. And that's kind of the area where we want to see a little bit better, because
cooperation.
Yes. Because so far it was I think five of the family members had it, and the sixth who didn't have it came to school. And that's the case that we want to prevent. If everybody else has it, then even though you're healthy, you should stay. And the second part of that is growing up, especially with middle and high school students. Let them know, if anybody in your family is sick, you probably should stay home too, even though you're not sick. And that's where, as long as we're able to offer a high-quality remote learning experience, then the consequence for them to stay home isn't as bad. It's not like they need to make up 2 weeks of work. Because if they're participating in the class and they're getting the Google Classroom that everybody in person is getting, and it's as close to the norm as we can possibly manage, then it's not a huge inconvenience, and it's not like the teacher or the student need to do a lot of work to catch up. So, and that seems to be working okay. They're just, it's like a lot of little technical things. You know, how do I make sure that my headset is working with the computer and the login, and where I position the camera? And but I'm certain that with a few, you know, a little bit of trial and error, and then teachers learning lessons and sharing those lessons, that it won't be long before institutionally it's very much like a habit, a routine. And hopefully for the student as well, because we're not doing kind of a grab bag of things across the board, which some districts are. They're like, I could show you what some districts have said. It's like, really? You know, just figure it out and do whatever you want, and just make sure they connect. So it might be asynchronous, it might be synchronous, it might be using FaceTime, it might be this. And I'm thinking, oh, the poor students on the other end, where, you know, we've got one teacher doing it this way, another teacher doing it a different way. So the consistency for our students that is the same is, I think, it helps the student. So keep our fingers crossed.
Okay.
And our number of 100% online is reduced. At one point we were over 200 students. I don't remember, 210 maybe or something. But 3 weeks ago-ish, might have been like at 180, and then down to 160. Right now we're just at 151 or something like that. So all of our schools said the first couple of weeks of school they saw kids coming. Back. I think October 1st is the last date that they can withdraw and get a refund for us.
October 1st?
October 1st.
I thought it was
earlier.
I thought it was earlier because I think in our last board meeting we talked about it being 2 weeks.
That was a deadline that we gave them.
Oh.
We gave them 3 weeks, just because, especially at the high school, if you miss 3 weeks of high school classes,
it's hard to move that.
It's hard to move that. And I think what we'll do, we're discussing it, is for second semester, is we can see how many students at each grade level in each school were 100% online. What would be the impact if they decided to come back into the schools? And what we might need to do is limit the number based on availability. And say, well, we've got space for this many third graders in such and such a school.
Right.
But
have we had a lot of open enrollment requests, more than usual, from Douglas County because of their hybrid model, whatever?
I've heard it put that way. That hybrid model or
whatever
they're doing,
yeah.
Whatever the heck they're doing. I don't know the answer to that question, and maybe at the next meeting, I'm not sure. There's two places where we can get that information. One is centrally with Shelley, who does the October count. The other is with each of the schools who approves out of district. But it's not an easy number to get because there's the previous out-of-district, which we wouldn't want to do if we wanted to say, well, what's the new out-of-district? And it would only, at this point, be one side of the equation, not both sides, because we wouldn't know how many left our district to go somewhere else.
Correct.
Like a multi-district online. We have an indication, a little bit, for homeschool. But they don't have to submit their homeschool notice to us. They could submit it to anybody. So we don't necessarily have everybody. So right now, Ron's feeling, you know, okay about the numbers. I mean, we don't have any indication that we're in a serious that we have a serious issue. That doesn't mean that we don't, but we don't have reason right now to believe that. We do have some good news from a planning perspective. We were assuming that the 100% online students, we would receive less money for them. But because they're enrolled through us, and if they're taking at least 5 classes, that's considered full-time, there would not be a funding differential. So that helps. There's a confusion.
Good, because we have to pay the online.
Yeah. Our first semester cost to Colorado Digital Learning Solutions is over $70,000. And then we have the cost, which is equal to that for the administration, of that just from the coordinator person, and then other costs. So,
yeah.
But at 150 something, it's clearly under 10%, maybe it's 8%. And just today I heard from districts, I think it was Adams 12, was around 30%. Cherry Creek's around 20%. Denver's around 5%. What they're seeing, the larger districts, is a lot more students that are living in poverty or English language learners where there's multi-generational families. That there's a higher degree of 100% online. In part, there's a couple of trends that you see. One is, if you have, it could be one or two wage earners in the family that where they can't afford to not be bringing in that income, right? So they don't want to take the risk of having to be out even for 2 weeks. So they're opting for it. You also have the multi-generational household. You might have the grandparents in the household where there's a concern about them getting sick and the impact that could have on them. And so it's not just a generalized, which there's some of that generalized fear of not wanting to catch the virus, but it's some concrete concerns about finances or about frail or vulnerable health conditions. I also think that what the school district is offering influences the online. So I think ours is low, in part because what we're offering in person is attractive. And if what you're offering in person isn't quite so attractive, then you might choose that.
You could join in the coping, Dave.
Well, I'm gonna adjust it for you. I'm sitting here shivering over here, but that's okay.
With your COVID?
Yeah, I'm so cold.
I talked to Jerry
Christie. Because there's two of us now.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's true.
We were talking about remote learning. She said
it is cold.
Yes. So we call remote learning what in person, what happens when you're in person and you can't be in person for 2 weeks. We call that remote learning.
Okay.
That's what we call just the language. What we call the 10,000 at Cherry Creek, we call that 100% online.
Okay.
So in our language, the 100, they've got 10,000 that are completely online. They're never in person. They don't want to be in person. And it's, I think, 20% is, so it's a lot. And there's just, describe it as just almost monumental organizational challenges for those districts because they're trying to take their teacher pool and say, okay, these are going to teach the permanent online. And as that number changes in terms of students, you know, they're really kind of having to move teachers back and forth. You know, you requested to be 100% online as a teacher, and first priority goes to people with health conditions or whatever else they determined. And now we've let some other ones, but now the students, there's fewer students that want it, so now we need to move you back. But we're going hybrid, and so we, you know, it's really been hard for them. I mean, and we don't, in part because we contracted out all of the online, we don't have that challenge.
The funds for that, did that come out of the federal COVID funds?
the funds to pay for the online learning?
100% online.
I don't know.
Okay.
I think Ron said that.
I couldn't remember. That's why I asked. I can't remember.
I would think that it is, but what we're doing, because there's some things that have made that is, we just ask the state every time we have a question. Yeah. Is this qualified?
Yep. Okay.
So, like on tonight's agenda, there's a subpay. I think we need to ask, does that increase subpay? Because it's just temporary, it's just COVID related. Does that
right?
I would hope that it does. I would think that it might, but we'll just ask them. And I'm sorry that I don't have an answer for that.
Okay.
You didn't ask the question, but I can't tell you.
Great.
So, I'm done.
You're done.
Your 20 minutes?
Hold on, let me get Carol off the floor real quick.
You did good.
Good.
Thank you for the update.
Yeah, I just felt like, you guys came in. I mean, I might as well.
Nobody else is talking, so.
Yeah.
We don't have anybody else under. Yeah. And I mean under communications.
Don't get Carrie started.
No, I meant there's nobody else listed under communications, so you got the whole time.
Yes.
It's pretty awesome, huh?
Did Richard do it?
Enjoy it when you can.
I can tell.
Yeah.
Your eyes are starting to
droop.
Who's?
Oh, and you've got the football game line. No. Okay.
Is there
we're all done unless you have this.
Are there any other questions?
No.
Everybody's good? Okay. Thank you. That was good to know. Good update. We'll keep our fingers crossed. Okay, so moving on to consent agenda, can I get a motion to approve items 8.1 through 8.4?
So moved.
So it was John and then who?
Second.
Paul.
I forgot John moves everything.
He's quick.
He is.
He's also closer to us, so no one can hear him better sooner.
No, it's all you.
Okay, roll call please.
Director McNamara.
Yes.
Director Fonbauer.
Yes.
Director Gutenberg.
Aye.
Director Hines.
Aye.
Aye.
There are no action items and there are no discussion items. Douglas, you could have talked in between those. Next up, BOE planning. October 12th is our next meeting.
Isn't that Columbus Day?
It is.
Yep.
But we still have a meeting.
Well, okay. That'll probably go away after November 3rd.
We work hard. We don't take days off.
That's okay. Right. Well, I was a federal employee for a number of years.
You're not now. Now you're just a volunteer. So you have to work.
I don't know that extra duty assignments. John asked me to kind of bring that up and ask, what about board members?
Right. Hey, we're already past that. We voted.
I know. Just thought I'd throw that out.
So, John, will you be here on the 12th?
Yes, I will.
Okay. Everybody else? Yep. Somebody elk hunting? Or
no, not
that's the following that's one. The meeting after that, the 26th.
Yeah.
Carrie and I will not be here.
So, where are we having the meeting? Where are you having
it? Aspen.
We'll be up there and meet you up there.
It's a nasty drive.
To Aspen?
I'm sure it'll be cold,
where we
so
go.
I won't.
Don't you usually go up to?
It's called Lanado. It's 5.5 hours away. And an hour of it's up a logging road.
How many hours away?
5.5.
Yeah.
We'll just meet you in Aspen.
We're inviting the principals between now and Christmas to do a showcase.
So oh, good.
Combination of you guys seeing the schools, but then hearing from them in this setting, how it's been, and give you guys a report. So I know that last year we waited till the second semester, and we just had to do it once. But I really felt like, given the uniqueness of our situation. So I believe that there would be a showcase next meeting, and as well when you're out. I think there's one meeting in December, there's one meeting in November, and there were two in October.
Right.
So that's one for each. And we were just going to start with the principals. And then if we wanted to do anything on transportation or on something else, we would just add that to the agenda. But at a minimum. So
Okay.
Okay.
Cool.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you. Okay. Is there anything else?
You didn't do 11, 12, 13.
Yeah. Should we go?
Should we
go? Okay. There's no executive session needed. So with that, we'll adjourn this meeting at 6:59 p.m.